Hello, my name is Mike Dilk, and on the morning of Thursday, June the 18th, 2026, we were lucky enough to have St Albans MP Daisy Cooper come to the Mix 92.6 studio for an interview. She was with us for around half an hour, and we covered a wide range of local topics, so please do listen. Thank you. So our guest today is Daisy Cooper. She's the Liberal Democrat MP for St Albans and has been since 2019. She's a regular Thameslink commuter and an avid cyclist. Daisy has consistently raised concerns about the planning system and the impact of HGVs on roads around the new rail freight terminal in Park Street. I'm sure we'll talk about all that and much more. Daisy is also the deputy leader of the Liberal Democrats and the party's treasury spokesman. So, Daisy Cooper, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
The traditional greeting, really, for any St Albans meeting is, was the drive okay? And did you find anywhere to park?
So the drive was fine. There was no school traffic when I got here. So, yeah, I managed to miss the rush.
And I know you parked because we saved a parking spot for you.
You did. Thank you very much.
Important guests. We like to do that for important guests. The first topic I'd like to talk about is trains.
Mm.
Now, you're a founder member of the St Albans Commuter and Passenger Action Group.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have a snappy acronym?
I'm afraid not, no.
No, it's a mouthful.
It is a bit of a mouthful. But anyway, look, I set it up a few years ago. When was it, goodness? Was it 2017, 18, I think? It was that year when Thameslink had introduced a new timetable, and it was an absolute mess, and mm-hmm. it was causing huge frustration to people. They couldn't to work on time, they couldn't get back. Many parents were having to pay through the nose because their kids were staying in school late and schools were starting to charge for it. It just caused absolute chaos. Well, we had kids missing their GCSE exams, nurses late for work, so we set up the group then.
Things have moved on, and about 3 weeks ago or so, Thameslink was brought into public ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a good idea, or would you prefer kind of a mixed public private model for the railways?
I mean, to be honest, I think for most people, they don't really care who owns the railway. What they really want to know is it comfortable? Is it reliable? And is it affordable? And at the moment, there doesn't seem to be any signs yet that moving Thameslink into public ownership is going to address any of those three issues. So time will tell whether or not it improves. But, you know, I think that's really what people want.
That is what people want. And with it going back into public ownership, is it, I can imagine some people thinking, is this going back to the bad old days of British Rail?
Well, this is it, right? We, you know, under British Rail, you know, we had the worst of all worlds where the government was trying to control everything. And in more recent years, we've had a really kind of the worst of both worlds in terms of it didn't work under British Rail, then it hasn't worked when it's been privatised. Goodness knows what's going to happen now. I mean, I genuinely hope that we will see improvements. But, you know, the government's driving force seems to be around the ownership model, which is a kind of ideological position, which obviously they're entitled to have. We as Lib Dems have been pressing the government to focus very much on passengers rather than the ownership issue. We encourage the government to create a passenger charter, which would set out things like having comfortable chairs, having Wi-Fi, having facilities to put your suitcase without it rolling down the middle of the aisle, making sure that toilets are clean and that mm-hmm. stations are accessible, those kind of things. I think those are the real things that passengers want to see.
And they want to see trains on time. So with that kind of in mind, a while ago, it was actually 2022,
mm-hmm.
there was a power cut at St Albans Station.
Mm-hmm.
It was the winter time. It was dark. The station was dark. Trains didn't stop there. It was rush hour. It was utter chaos.
Yeah.
Which kind of system do you think would help prevent that? And also, you know, if we had a power cut now, mm-hmm. or maybe in the winter when the nights are a bit longer and it's dark at rush hour, what would happen now if that happened today?
Yeah. So look, I think we always say about Thameslink, when it works really well. And when it doesn't work, it's a complete disaster.
That's my experience for sure.
Exactly. and mine too. So I think when it comes to a power cut, it really depends on where the power cut is and what's caused it. Obviously, UK Power Networks are the organisation responsible for power generally in the area. But sometimes there can be problems with the rail system. If, for example, there's been a power outage around what they call the core. This is around the kind of Thameslink, City Thameslink area where the power goes from being in the lines to being in the tracks. Now, they are going to fix that issue this summer. So hopefully that issue about addressing problems arising from the core should be fixed from the autumn onwards. But, you know, fundamentally, we just need a railway line that's...
It's a case of infrastructure resilience, isn't it?
It is
really
about infrastructure resilience.
Because this was not a big major problem that caused this, and it led on to a major deal.
Absolutely. And one of my big concerns about infrastructure resilience is that in the coming years, we're going to see enormous pressure on the Thames Link line. We've got the new Luton Airport expansion, we've got the new Universal Studio near Bedford, we've got huge numbers of extra housing, top-down housing numbers from the government. There's going to be huge pressure on the Thames Link line, yeah. And we know that it's going to breach capacity within 5 years unless the government invests in the kind of Croydon area to free up extra space on the line. And that's one of the things that I and many others are pressing the government to do.
Okay, all right. Moving on, yeah. But similar topic. On your Instagram, you've got a video talking about bike theft.
Mm.
And you say on the video that the surveillance on the cameras is now much better and joined up, and the British Transport Police and the Harts Police and Thames Link can all share info to try and stop bike theft. So what are the stats? Are there any stats to show this is working?
So we did have some stats about the scale of the problem, and it did show that St Albans was one of the worst places in the country for being a bike theft hotspot.
Yep.
I think Cambridge pipped us to the post, and they've obviously got
on
a lot more bikes.
On some things, it's good not to be first.
Exactly. And Cambridge does have a lot more bikes. So we were definitely one of the worst places as a hotspot. We have seen some of the improvements have come to fruition so far. So, for example, there are now more safety mechanisms around the actual secure bike area, which, to be frank, wasn't very secure for a long time, but that should hopefully improve that. In terms of everybody being able to access each other's CCTV, that is about to come in.
So that hasn't happened yet.
And it hasn't happened just yet, but we're just on the cusp of it happening. And then hopefully as soon as that happens, it does mean that the local police and Thames Link, British Transport Police, can all access that information. Because one of the problems we had was not only were people climbing over the secure area into the bikes area, taking a bike out, they were then jumping on the train with it, and by the time anybody had noticed or it had been reported, nobody could actually then chase that criminal before they then jumped off somewhere else and hit the bike.
I bet when they jumped on the train, they didn't pay for the ticket either. So, which is another bugbear of mine. Do you think with all this better surveillance, the amount of non-payment will get better? Because it's prolific. I go to the station to pick up my wife and I see just people pushing through.
Yeah.
It's got to the point where I sometimes think, should I bother paying?
Well, I hope you do bother paying. Everybody should bother paying, because otherwise there's no funds to make our railway line work. And of course, it is an offence not to pay. But no, it's deeply frustrating, isn't it? I think it can be frustrating for folk. And I've seen it, and I've had people push through the barriers behind me as well, you know. And sometimes you look at these characters and it can feel a bit intimidating to challenge them, you know, because they can sometimes look a little bit shady.
I feel sorry for the staff, actually,
who
if they do kind of question them, it's not a nice place to be to deal with that.
It's not nice. And of course, you know, I think many of us feel frustrated that we play by the rules, we pay our taxes, we want the system to be fair. And it's deeply frustrating when people don't pay their way, to use our public transport. So, I mean, let's hope that the CCTV also enables them to catch these people too.
All right. So you get on the train. Yep. Hopefully it runs to time. Hopefully you've paid for the ticket. As you go into London, you see a lot of construction work happening for the Park Street Rail interchange. Why is this a good idea?
Well, I don't think it is. I fought this and Liberal Democrats fought it, and residents have been fighting it for years and years and years, best part of a couple of decades now. And the first time that there was an application to build the rail freight here, of course, it was turned down because it was Greenbelt land. And it's not just that it's Greenbelt, it's actually wedged, you know, cheek by jowl with very small little villages. So, whilst on the grand scheme of things, we do need to have rail infrastructure to get lorries off roads and onto rail, it should not have been built in a place where there was no access onto the M25 or onto an M road. It should not have been built somewhere where it's really rubbing up against very small villages. And so it's the location, you know, that I've objected to. So look, we fought it. We fought the actual permission, which was granted by a former Conservative Secretary of State, Eric Pickles. We fought the selling of the land by Hertfordshire County Council when it was run by the Conservative administration.
So you fought it, but the fact is, it's happening.
Exactly, well, that's
so can anything be done now, or is it done deal? Is it hands in the air? But can we sort of somehow mitigate some of the issues, some of the problems?
It's a done deal. It's going to be built. It is being built. There were some planning conditions put on the application initially by the Secretary of State, but they weren't very strong. And this is one of the problems you have, is that when a Secretary of State gives approval for a planning permission, they put planning conditions on it, yeah. but then it's down, falls to the local authority to try and enforce those. But there aren't very many conditions there. So the local authority can only enforce what the Secretary of State put in place. So, I mean, it is going to go ahead. We can't stop it. We have to make sure that the local authority can do, you know, what it can to make sure that they are following the rules that were set down, but they're not able to do any more than that.
Okay.
So yeah, it's going ahead. I think many of us are concerned about the number of lorries that will probably end up being on our roads as a result. So yeah, unfortunately, let's wait and see.
What about the issue? One issue about it that kind of worries lots of people is there's going to be more trains from that facility, goods trains, and like the track is full already with commuter trains. Is the future not looking great for St Albans commuters?
Well, the rail freight will only travel at specified times overnight. And that is something, I can't remember which body it is, but there is a body that looks at when that happens. And so hopefully it won't cause any disruption during the day. But it does add to this overall question about capacity on our rail lines. As I say, where you've got Luton Airport expansion, you've got the Universal Studios in Bedford, you've got planning, you know, new houses going up everywhere and a rail freight terminal. The combined effect of all of this is it is going to put a lot of pressure on our railway.
Okay, all right, perhaps we better park that, because that's a worry.
Nice pun.
Yeah. I see you in the centre of St Albans doing your shopping, so I know you're very much a user of the city centre. There's a large development plan on Victoria Street, and I know consultants have been involved and drawn up plans and ideas. Are the kind of locals and the users of those streets going to get a say, particularly Victoria Street, on how and when the project might progress? And if they do, will it make any difference? Because I get the impression lots of money has been spent on consultants and designers. Is it kind of a done deal?
There is no done deal at all. So, and nothing has been decided. So Victoria Street, obviously, from the station into town, is a really key artery. It's one of those roads that gives a first impression to people who are either visiting our city or to residents who are walking into the city centre from other parts, you know, of St Albans, whether it's Fleetville or Cunningham or elsewhere. And so it's really important that main artery is made to be as welcoming and inclusive as possible. I think most people would agree that improvements could be made. So, look, a group was set up by Hertfordshire County Council. It has some elected councillors on there. It has some resident representatives. It has some business representatives. The local business improvement district is a member of that working group as well. They've done an initial round of consultation. Mm-hmm. They've gathered a whole bunch of ideas. They're now throwing those ideas out for consultation to see what people think. Some people might like some of those ideas. They might hate some of those ideas. But based on the feedback from residents and from businesses alike, that working group, as I understand it, will be narrowing down the options and then coming up with a new proposal.
Okay. So I haven't seen any plans. So there will be an opportunity for everybody to see the plans and make comments if they wish.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. I did have one thought about it. This might be a bit unkind, I don't know. But from some angles, it kind of feels like the objective is to make way for the Hertfordshire Essex Rapid Transport. This is this big electric bendy bus. So really just to make it a thoroughfare for that thing and never mind the rest of you.
So that's not the plan. So the thing about Victoria Street and the reason why they're looking at changes to Victoria Street is because all of the evidence shows that the people who use it are pedestrians and cyclists. And there's far more usage by pedestrians and cyclists than there are by car users. And so, because obviously it's close to the train station, right? So people are walking in. Mm-hmm. So the key is to try and make the street reflect that in terms of how it is designed. So as far as I'm aware, there is no objective of linking any plans for the Hart Rapid Transport System with Victoria Street specifically. I'm not a local council member. I'm not on that Hertfordshire working group. But to the best of my knowledge, that isn't part of the plan. The plan is to make Victoria Street a more welcoming place for cyclists and pedestrians, who are the predominant users of that artery from the station into the city centre.
So this next question might be a bit unfair as well, but I'll ask it. There are a lot of local businesses along that street that rely on people parking near to them to use them, and I'm pretty sure they're kind of worried about some of these potential developments.
Well, they'll have their opportunity to feed into the group as well. As I say, the Business Improvement District, which represents all of the businesses in the city centre, are a member of this working group, and they've been an active participant for a little while. Mm-hmm. But any individual business that feels like their views haven't been heard or reflected can obviously feed into the consultation.
Good, right. We'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Sure.
Another transportation type question. Residents across St Albans, they're increasingly worried about the number of potholes damaging cars, you know, creating safety risks for cyclists and pedestrians. Sometimes I quite like them actually because I think it slows traffic down.
On my bike, I do not like a pothole. No. Blimey.
What steps are you taking to try and secure funding and ensure faster repairs? Because, you know, it upsets a lot of people.
Look, I think wherever you are in the country, people hate potholes. You know, not only are they dangerous, it can be incredibly expensive if you burst a tyre. And it's just very disruptive, right? Because when people are driving, they're on their way to go somewhere. And so it can really, you know, mess up people's daily lives, whether they're going to work or play or hospital or whatever it might be. So actually making sure the state of our roads, making sure that our roads are in a better state is really, really important. Potholes are an issue everywhere in the country. certainly, it's a county issue. It's not an MP issue, but at the county level, Hertfordshire County Council are not being complacent at all. They increased the number of people that were repairing potholes this year. They've introduced a new trial. Under the previous Conservative administration, they used to wait until a pothole was bad enough to fill it in. Under the way that the Liberal Democrats are doing it, they go to an area and try and blitz every single pothole they can see in a specific area and tackle them patch by patch, and that has already seen an improvement. So look, we're not complacent.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there any stats or follow-up to show that this is working?
Yeah, well, it's very hard to get statistics on potholes because when people report, you rely on people reporting them in the first instance. When people report them, often a number of people are reporting the same pothole. So you might have 5 reports of one pothole, or you might have no reports of 3 potholes. Then when they're filled in, obviously they can then fall into disrepair again very soon if there's heavy traffic or, you know, there's bad weather. And so it's quite hard. It's actually very difficult to get statistics on potholes generally. But the government has put a national system in place to look broadly at people's performances, as well as the performances of local councils. Hertfordshire County Council is just 1% off having a green rating. So believe it or not, Hertfordshire County Council's roads are certainly not in the worst state in the country.
Okay.
Which is a surprise to all of us.
This is certainly something you will get feedback from the public.
Oh, sure.
Because it's something that people love to talk about.
I drive on these roads too. I've had my tyre punctured, driving around in Brickett Wood as I was at the time, and I find it incredibly scary to cycle on roads in St Albans or anywhere else in Hertfordshire when there are potholes roundabout. So look, I'm not complacent about it at all. I'm not saying everything is fine. But as I say, you know, if you look at the government's own statistics, we're certainly not in the worst category. We're just a whisker off being in the best group. There you go.
All right.
That's what the government says.
Yeah, moving on, another topic that local people really kind of think about a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of construction work going on at St Albans Hospital. Mm-hmm. I think the plan is to make it a rapid access diagnostic and surgical hub. Mm-hmm. So essentially with 4 operating theatres. So this is welcome. I think this is good news. But there's the question, what can be done to guarantee that this big expansion of services will actually there be sufficient people to run it? You know, it's going to need everyone. It's going to need surgeons, doctors, nurses, orderlies, building maintenance staff, cooks, cleaners, everything.
Yeah.
Are we going to be able to find these staff?
I hope so. that isn't a concern that the Hospital Trust has raised with me at all. I mean, fundamentally, this is a good news story. We are going to have world-class, first-class cancer services in our community in St Albans. And it's more likely these days that somebody gets cancer than needs A&E. And we're going to have that service right on our doorstep. And that is so, so important. The idea that you could go to see your GP with a concern, you could then be referred to this cancer service, and in a single day, a one-stop shop, you go in, you get a diagnosis, or you go in with a referral, you get an examination, you get your diagnosis, whether you have cancer or not, and you have a treatment plan, all within one day, is a remarkable achievement. So this is a really, really good news story. What I would say, though, is that with any big development, obviously it does have ramifications for the people who live closest by, the trust, you know, on the whole, is a good neighbour. They don't want to have bad relationships with people who live nearby. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are some people who have been disrupted by noise and dust and those kind of things. But generally speaking, I think we are incredibly lucky that we're going to have this cancer hub on our doorstep. As I say, the Trust doesn't seem to have any problems whatsoever with recruiting the staff that they need at the moment. I'll certainly ask them about it. But as far as I'm aware, they don't have any more acute problems than any other trust.
This is good news. It needs to go hand in hand with community and social care services. Mm. And there's a lot of talk about that. So, and social care reform, and there's been talk about it over the years.
Yeah.
Is it actually going to happen anytime soon?
Sadly, I don't think it will. And it's a huge frustration to me personally, and also to my political party. So you may or may not remember, but the last general election, we had a really big focus on social care. You know, my party leader, Ed Davey, is a carer. He's cared for lots of different members of his family. And there are many of us as MPs who have had caring responsibilities. And you cannot save the NHS unless you fix social care. And also social care just gives people dignity and independence when they're vulnerable or in their older years. The government said they were going to look at social care. They said they were going to convene cross-party talks. And that was when Wes Streeting was the mm-hmm. health secretary. Those talks only took place once. And effectively, it looks like they're kicking the can down the road again. And I think that's desperately sad for all those people who rely on social care. And it's just bad for our health and care services generally.
So that future for St Albans residents who need that sort of care and looking after is less bright.
Well, I think for everyone, everywhere in the country, it's less bright. I mean, here in St Albans and in West Hertfordshire generally, you know, a lot of focus is put on care. Hertfordshire County Council has a responsibility for delivering social care. It tends to get very good ratings. But of mm-hmm. course, you know, like every part of the country, a huge chunk of the council tax that we pay goes towards social care. And that means that there's less money for other services. And really, the only way to make sure that you know, that money goes further is to get a solution from government.
OK, talking about social care.
Yeah.
Everybody needs somewhere to live. Mm-hmm. So housing is a major issue in St Albans.
Yeah.
What can we do to ensure that there's enough housing in St Albans to actually meet local demand?
Yeah, sure. So again, I'm afraid this is going to be a national solution if there's ever going to be one. We Lib Dems want the government to commit to building 150,000 social homes a year. These are effectively council houses. And because we don't have enough social homes either here in St Albans or in Hertfordshire or across the country, what ends up happening is that there's lots of people who have nowhere to live, and therefore landlords can put their rents up. So there's a lot of people who are living in places with very, very high rent. And then if people then can't afford that rent, they can often become homeless. And because there's nowhere to put them, the council then has to put them in temporary housing. And we've had some desperate cases, really desperate cases. You know, I won't go into details. I don't want to disclose anyone's identity. But, you know, a pregnant woman with you know, a small child having to live you know, in a hotel room, trying to feed a young child and pregnant, and then, you know, giving birth and trying to feed that baby with no facilities to store milk or to keep it cool. I mean, you know, it's really, really not okay. There have been a spike in cases like that recently, mm-hmm. largely because the government was bringing in the Renters Reform Act, which was going to ban no-fault evictions. But because landlords knew that that was being brought in, actually a lot of people were then suddenly kicked out, and we saw a spike in homelessness. Okay. And the council had to spend a lot of money on placing people into that temporary accommodation. But the long-term solution to this is fundamentally to build the kind of homes that we need and to make sure that local authorities have enough money to place people in these homes.
I suppose part of the reason for this is a knock-on effect that the, you know, the average price of a house in St Albans is, you know, is 635,000. For a lot mm-hmm. of people, you know, it might as well be 10 million.
Yeah.
So what are there any specific steps you can take to kind of make sure that there are genuinely affordable homes? There might be homes, but maybe no one can afford them.
Yeah, sure.
What can we do there?
Well, look, we have social homes, which are effectively council homes, right, and housing association homes for those people who can afford to pay a little bit of rent but are supported by the government in doing that. Then you've got affordable homes, but, I mean, they're so-called affordable homes, right, because affordable homes are really about 80% of the market rate, which still for many people are not very affordable. And then you have homes at the market rate. Fundamentally, if you want to solve these long-term problems, you need to build the social homes that we need. And I also think there should be better regulation of homes that are for rent. I've campaigned for years now for local authorities to be able to have the power to regulate the number and location of Airbnbs. And in a place like St Albans, of course we want to have tourism, so of course we want to have some Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. But with a massive proliferation of them, it means there are fewer apartments available to individuals, to young families, to couples who are looking to rent somewhere in St Albans. And when you take all these places out of the rental market, market for people who want to live here, it pushes up prices right. in the ones that are left.
So that's an issue in St Albans right
it's,
now,
is it's it? A really the big, it's a really big okay. issue in St Albans. A number of people have been kicked out of their homes by landlords because the landlord can raise more, can get more money by renting it out for stag do's and hen do's on a weekend than they can for renting it out to somebody Goodness. Who lives right. and works in St Albans. And that's had a really profound effect on young people. Yeah. Many young people who live and work in St Albans can only do so because they're living with their parents.
So that we can get around that with planning rules and regulations.
We could. It would require the government to bring in that particular legislation and to give local authorities that power. Okay. And I'll continue to press the government to do that.
So on the topic of planning, I know there's quite a large development along Sandpit Lane. Mm-hmm. I think it's Oakland's Grange. Mm-hmm. There's 348 new houses. Mm-hmm. So that's been done. I don't know this for sure, but I expect each one of those has like one or two cars. Mm-hmm. So really, is that a good thing? Is there a bus laid on? Is there a bus at all to take people to the station or the city centre? Or is it just really sort of gumming up St Albans and building houses without infrastructure that goes with it?
Yeah. So one of the worst things that ever happened in local government reorganisation years and years and years ago was the separation of planning, which is building housing, that was given to district councils, and infrastructure, which was given to the county council. And it means that planning, housing and infrastructure have always been different responsibilities of different councils. And that has caused this right. ridiculous mess that we're in. One, to give credit where credit is due, the government has passed a bill that is going to put those two powers back together again. So with the move to unitary authorities under local government reorganisation, there'll be a single council responsible for both housing and infrastructure. And that is a good thing in the long term. But in the short term, our district council still has to press ahead with all these housing developments to hit the government's housing targets, but not always with the right infrastructure in place.
Goodness. All right. Let's hope that happens, because there's an awful lot more housing planned yeah. in that area.
Yeah.
So it's my concern is going to start looking like a dormitory. People live here and go into London and that's it. Nothing yeah. more. OK. Now, you have a national role as well, and we also see you in the centre of St Albans, like I said. So how do you manage to balance your national leadership responsibilities, you know, with looking after us, your constituents?
Yeah, I think they go side by side. Because I hear from a lot of people write to me, you know, every single day, hundreds of people write to me with their questions about, you know, the cost of living, the cost of doing business, the business rates crisis. I can use my national platform to put local issues on the national stage. So when I have local businesses writing to me saying that, you know, the jobs tax has put up the cost of employing young people and I can't afford to do it anymore, or the business rates means that my business is going to go bust, I can use my national role to elevate those concerns. So I would say that they complement each other nicely.
Okay, that's nice. So, and other than talking on local radio, what mechanisms do you use to sort of get your face out there in the centre?
Well, I've always maintained that you've got to be everywhere where everybody else is. So, and we still use the old-fashioned leaflets because, you know, a lot of people, you know, if leaflets didn't work, then pizza companies wouldn't send them out. So we still have old-fashioned leaflets, which tend to go out to every household. I come on radio stations locally and nationally. I'm on social media, on most platforms. I post less on X these days because it's a bit of a bin fire. But on every
well,
other platform,
fight, isn't it?
Yeah, on every other platform, I'm fairly active. Whether it's on social media, whether it's being roundabout, whether it's holding surgeries, visiting local people, whether it's putting out leaflets, I try and do my best to communicate with people. There's a basic principle behind this. I think, you know, basically I'm employed and elected by local people, and it's my duty to tell them how I'm spending my time and what I'm doing on their behalf.
Okay. Well, look, Daisy, I know you're very busy and you need to get off now. So thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Taking some time to chat, and it's much appreciated. And I'd, you know, like to invite you back on at some time again in the future.
Sounds lovely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.